I'm your brother Fire Mary Diesel Ogaya, and welcome to the Class War Battlefield Podcast. When I started this show in 2011, my goal was to inform. Obviously, the show has evolved, a lot of new topics, a lot of new thoughts, taking on metaphysics, some spirituality, hitting you with all types of things that you may have never heard of, and some that you have. It's always lively. But now I'm coming to you to ask you to help me prolong this podcast. For years, I have been producing this podcast for free on your behalf. I am now coming to you to ask you to support this work. $2, $5, $10, $20, $50, whatever you can do, please do.
Now, the definition.
Juneteenth was celebrated yesterday as it was signed a federal holiday back in 2021. And because it's something celebrating people other than white Americans, conservatives had so much to say about it. So let's start with the tiny faced man himself, Charlie Kirk, whose little picture on Twitter I can't even believe is not a Photoshop to shrink the size of his facial features since it enlarged the size of his head, tweeted out, "You should be working today, not taking today off for a CRT-inspired federal holiday that competes with July 4th." Although it's almost like the July 4th was not a day of freedom and independence for Black people living in America at that time. I wonder why some people might want to recognize a day that actually celebrates the freedom of Black people in this country. One of those people who definitely doesn't want to celebrate that is Candace Owens herself, who tweeted out, "Juneteenth is still ghetto and made up. Hope everyone enjoys it." Although I'll say she got quite a bit of backlash on Twitter for tweeting that out, as did Charlie Kirk. But with her logic, if Juneteenth, which is the anniversary, for anyone who doesn't know, it's the anniversary of the final enslaved persons being freed in Texas after the Civil War, with, you know, AKA Emancipation Day. If that's a made up holiday, every holiday is a made up holiday. July 4th is a made up holiday. And Republican Senator Josh Hawley surprisingly attempted to be supportive of Juneteenth, question mark, but it really just proved how out of touch he is. So let's pull up the tweet from Josh Hawley. He said, "Today is a good day to remember Christianity is the faith and America is the place slavery came to die." Which is so, so not true. And Laura Bassett, writing for Jezebel, wanted to just prove how untrue his sentiment was. Mind-blowingly stupid. So let's get into that. She wrote, "In reality, the United States lagged decades behind most other countries in the Western Hemisphere in abolishing slavery. England, Mexico, France, and Denmark had all ended slavery before we adopted the 13th Amendment in 1865. And while it's unclear from a logical or even syntax perspective what, quote, Christianity is the faith is supposed to mean in that tweet, Hawley also seems to be whiffing on the irony that Americans used Christianity to justify slavery in the first place. For white people, June 19th is a great day either to read and amplify Black voices and Black history and consider the racist underpinnings of this nation, or at least shut the F up if you're uninterested in doing the aforementioned. Unfortunately, many white people, particularly Republican white men, find themselves incapable of any kind of self-reflection on this day and instead vomit their fragile defensive feelings on Maine. Exhibit A, Senator Josh Hawley." And this is all evident by this C-SPAN caller.
Hi, good morning. I really appreciate your show. It certainly enlightens me how Democrats think. I have not heard one white Democrat apologize for slavery. I haven't heard any Black person say thank you to the over 300,000 white men who died to free those Black slaves. I'm astonished. I realize we're focusing on slavery, but my descendants are from Scotland and Ireland. We never owned slaves.
Jesus H. Christ. I'm begging other Irish Americans to stop making us look bad. Stop claiming that we're the original slaves. It's not true. Indentured servitude is not nearly the horrific monstrosity on civilization that was chattel slavery. And the impact of it has not been lasting like the impact of chattel slavery. Shut the hell up, man. Just shut the hell up. I mean, Jake, these people are so racist that they're mad that they got a day off work. To me, you gotta be a professional racist to be angry about that.
I know, right? So I'm a first generation immigrant. When I came here when I was 8. So my family certainly had nothing to do with slavery here in America. That doesn't mean that I'm opposed to black people celebrating liberation from slavery. Why would it mean that? Like, why do you go in that direction? The only reason to go in that direction is if you're telling on yourself. Like, you caught feelings like, oh yeah, well, now they want a day off? Oh, just because they were liberated? Why are you upset by that? What a weird thing to be upset about. Are you upset that America was liberated, that Mexico was liberated, Canada? Like, all these countries have different days of celebration. And sometimes, yes, for a minority within the country. Why does that bother you? It's weird that it bothers you. All right, now let's break it down one by one, the comments. So Josh Hawley, where slavery came to die. Well, there's actually some ironic truth to that, because we were one of the last countries to stop doing slavery. So it lasted until we were among the last to kill it off, right? England and and Denmark and France and Mexico had all ended slavery way before us. No, we hung on to it all the way till its deathbed. The only part that I agree with even slightly, not in the framing, not in how he said it, is look, the Union soldiers gave their lives to end slavery. That's great. That's why I love the Union. You know the other name for the Union? America. The other name for Confederates, traitors. And by the way, Josh Hawley, who said that comment, also voted in opposition to renaming military bases after Confederate generals. He thought these Confederate generals that betrayed the country, committed treason, led to the deaths of hundreds of thousands of Americans, and all so that they could keep slaves. We should celebrate them by naming our American military bases after these traitors. I'm sure that Josh Hawley would like to do likewise for Osama bin Laden and some other people, and maybe Goering and others that have also attacked America. Now we go to Candace Owens. It's a made up holiday. Of course, Rayvana's right. All holidays are made up. Then I wondered, wait, when did they start celebrating these holidays? So for example, I have never seen Candace Owens or Charlie Kirk or any of these folks question Father's Day. Got news for you, Father's Day, entirely made up, okay? And not made up to celebrate fathers, right? Because man, the day of liberation for fathers, no. That was made up to sell more cards and flowers and nonsense, okay? It's an invention of American marketing firms, okay? And by the way, it turns out the first holiday of Father's Day was celebrated in 1910. Whereas Juneteenth was celebrated almost immediately after liberation. So between 1865 and 1877 is when it began. So it's older than Father's Day. But I'm sure, which just a couple of days ago was Father's Day, right before Juneteenth, I'm sure you'll find Candace Owens and Charlie Kirk so mad about it, right? No. They're paid to attack black people for a living, and gay people and others. But Candace is black, so she gets paid more to be a sellout. Are you gonna cry, Candace? Are you gonna cry about that? I'm sure you got a very comfortable house to go cry in for being that sellout, but that's her job, is to attack other black people and call them ghetto for saying, hey, you know what? Maybe it was a good thing that slavery ended. Maybe we should celebrate that a little bit. We didn't have freedom in 1776, we had it in 1865. No, that's apparently ghetto. Candace, we all see you, man. You think we don't see you? And it's not working for the idiot billionaires funding Candace Owens. She's not convincing any other black people to cheer on, like, oh yeah, this damn holiday. You're celebrating that into slavery. What was wrong with it in the first place? Oh, it's not working. Nobody thinks that. You're paying her for just the, you know what? you're the actual, the billionaires funding her, you're the suckers at the table. She's totally ineffectual. All minorities laugh at her and think she's a laughing stock, sellout, like embarrassment. But you morons are keep giving her money. Go attack black people. Go attack their holidays. Go attack everything about her. And the number of voters she switched over is zero.
Hi, folks are already tripping about Juneteenth. Check this out. A Chicago woman posted this video on TikTok. It has gone viral after she claimed she was kicked out of school for correcting the institution's director on the true meaning behind Juneteenth. All right, so listen to the video she posted.
So today I got kicked out of school because the director at my school didn't like the feedback that I had for her about something that she said in class. So I go to school right now for aesthetics. I was practicing to be an esthetician. Now at my school on Monday and Wednesdays, we have this thing called morning meetings where we basically like, you know, just talk about what's gonna happen for the day, the next few days, and we celebrate people that's like graduating and all of that type of stuff. Now, the director at my school had an announcement for us, and she said that Monday we would be celebrating Juneteenth, but instead of celebrating it for what it's for, we're gonna celebrate it as a diverse day, make it a diverse holiday. And I immediately got turned off by that because it's Juneteenth, right? So after the morning meeting was over, I went up to the director and I asked to speak to her in private. We went into her office and I basically explained to her, I'm like, yeah, the way you worded it at the morning meeting today, it's, I didn't like how you said it because Juneteenth isn't a diverse holiday. It's, you know, it's not a diverse holiday. It's not where we celebrate diversity. We celebrate African American independence. And she was basically telling me like, yeah, you need to mind your business because you don't know what I have planned for Monday. We're a diverse school. Therefore, we're going to celebrate this holiday as a diverse day. And I was immediately turned off because that, like, it's, that's not what Juneteenth is about, right? So after that, I went back into the classroom and some of my classmates were like asking me like, what did she say? Because we were all in agreement that that's not what Juneteenth isn't about. You know, we don't celebrate Cinco de Mayo as diversity. We don't celebrate Haitian Flag Day as diversity. We don't celebrate Indigenous People Day as diversity, you know? So I felt like, why would you take our holiday and try to make it something that it's not? So while I was in the class, we were all talking about, you know, just basically what had happened at the morning meeting. The director storms in after me and she's like, yeah, you need to come here. And I just asked her, I said, you want me to go home, don't you? She was like, yeah, get your stuff and leave. You will be suspended. And I'm like, suspended? Suspended for what? And she's like, yeah, so now you need to leave my campus before I call the police. So after that, we got into an argument because I have to tell it wasn't even that deep. It's not that deep. Like, why are you making it this whole thing? So we got into an argument in front of all of the students in my class. Like, she completely humiliated me, told everybody that she was suspending me and that I had to go home. Like, you're not supposed to, first of all, you're not supposed to tell my personal business to other students. That's number one. Second of all, you're mad because I had an opinion about what you had to say. I did the right thing and I pulled you to the side and told you, like, I don't think that's what we should be celebrating it as. So after that whole argument, she's like, yeah, now you need to leave my building. And instead of being suspended, you'll be expelled. I'm like, expelled for what? So we get into another argument as I'm leaving the door because I'm like, you're dead wrong. Your feelings are hurt. You didn't like what I had to say. And now you want to expel me and still try to make me pay for a school that I didn't fully get to attend? That's not right. So as I'm leaving the building, before I left, I wanted to like explain to my teacher, like, she's not going to be letting me back, you know, what had happened. I wanted to talk to my teacher, one of the cool teachers, right? So she's like trying to grab me by my book bag. She's pulling on me, get out of my building, get out of my building. And I'm like, just wait, let me talk to my teacher because I want to talk to my teacher before I leave. Like, you doing all of this for no reason. we get in front of the clients, because at my school we take client. It's a beauty school, so we perform services on clients. She told the clients, "Yeah, I'm trying to remove this racist out of my building. She won't leave. She's a racist. I'm racist because I said Juneteenth isn't a diverse holiday. So now I'm the racist, right? In this situation, I'm the racist. Her feelings are hurt. I'm a racist, and she wants me to leave." After like a minute of me trying to find my professor, I could not find her. So you know what? I'm like, yeah, I'm gonna leave. But as I'm walking back to the front, she's on the phone with the police. She told the police I tried to attack her and that I wouldn't leave the building. No, hold on. Let's take this back. There's multiple people sitting in this lobby. There was multiple people in my classroom. Not once did I try to attack you. There's cameras in this building which show I did not try to attack you. I wasn't being violent or nothing like that. She called the police on me, said I tried to attack her. All of this because she didn't like that I didn't like that Juneteenth shouldn't be celebrated as a diverse holiday. So yeah, right now, I left, I'm gone. I left the review in the comments because I don't feel like that's right. Students of color, we can't express our feelings without directors at the school feeling like it's an attack on them, or everything has to be an attack on everybody when it comes down to black people and African Americans in America. So, yeah, that's just an update.
All right, the woman, the TikToker Gol K, again, she's studying at Tricocha University. That's TRICOCI. And that is absolutely nuts, if you will. Nyambi, see, this is the thing right here. First of all, she's right. Juneteenth is not a diverse holiday. What I mean by that is, it does not mean that non-black people cannot commemorate Juneteenth. But you damn well better make sure that the focus on Juneteenth is the focus, and then not try to create some new idea what Juneteenth should be about.
Well, absolutely, Roland. I think this young lady was exactly right in telling her, like, hold on a second. This is about black people achieving freedom. This isn't just some holiday. I mean, you know, she used the example of Cinco de Mayo, but Cinco de Mayo at this point is commercial and it's not even really about Mexican people. But to her point, we identify that holiday with a group of people in the same way. Juneteenth is a national holiday that commemorates the freedom of black people who were enslaved in this country. That cannot be missed because some people are uncomfortable, right, acknowledging what this is about. And ultimately, would probably, if we believe the story as this woman has suggested, what probably drove this director crazy was the fact that this young person corrected her and was not okay with sort of going along to get along. Because ultimately, this diverse holiday of trying to redesignate this holiday, which was born out of, you know, the events of 2020 and the unfortunate demise of George Floyd, which we all were traumatized and witnessed, and the protests thereafter, that we will not then say that this does not have anything to do with black people. Decentering black people and decentering blackness is about other people's comfort. And we cannot allow that be the rubric or the measure by which we celebrate and revere our ancestors and all those who fought for that freedom because somebody wants to call it a diverse holiday as if we are supposed to be satisfied with that. And I think this young woman would do well to find another educational institution that respects her and other students like her.
And that right there, Matt, is the thing for me that I keep saying, we need to be very vigilant and not letting these folks try to redefine what Juneteenth is and turn it into a simply another day for people to sell some stuff.
Absolutely. I'm glad you said that, because that's what we're finding with a lot of other holidays, not even holidays that are just black centered, but you're finding the corporatization of holidays and things like Pride this very month, right, where corporations find a way to make a dollar and they co-opt it, and then it becomes some everybody come and have a party, and when it's not about that, particularly when Juneteenth is not only about Black Americans but Black Texans like you and I, especially here in Galveston. But the idea that the slaves were told 2 years late, I mean, Juneteenth is not about anybody else. And beyond that, it's not just a happy holiday. We should definitely celebrate emancipation. But we should also say this is emblematic of exactly what we've endured since we've been here. 2 years later, the Union soldiers come and tell us that we've been free for 2 years. I mean, that's a holiday that deserves significant reverence and reverence for our forebears and what they withstood. And the idea that it gets whitewashed, so to speak, and becomes everybody's diversity holiday is grossly offensive. And that's precisely the kind of thing we have to be vigilant against. You know, look, we talk about DEI on the show. We talk about a lot of things in terms of inclusion, but inclusion does not have to mean erosion, where we should not have our history and the reverence that should be duly applied eroded for other people's comfort, as Dr. Nyambi said. So with that, I'm glad that this sister stood up, because this is grossly offensive to try to make this about anything other than our people and emancipation.
Just that's like somebody saying, let's make St. Patrick's Day diverse.
Absolutely, man. I understand. Well, look, I think, you know, anytime that I talk to my students about Juneteenth in the first place, I think it's important to understand that there's kind of two sides to that story. And just like my fellow panelists talked about, people who were informed about their emancipation way late. But then there's another piece that people don't deal with, which is the massacre of the people when they are no longer able to be exploited by the white system. Right. And I think it's important for us to see both sides of that. If since now this has become a national holiday, mainly because we know that once things become national holidays, they get co-opted. You'll see Juneteenth ice cream at the store. That's not really what this is about. And so what we're trying to do and what this student rightfully did was try to educate people. If you're going to tell folks about Juneteenth, tell them about what Juneteenth is. Don't allow, particularly in a time of, you know, we see what's happening in Florida, rolling out all these things to take away not just critical race theory, but Black history. We can't allow the whitewashing of Black history to continue to the point where there's nothing that is specifically reserved for the culture.
Absolutely. And so, again, we must remain vigilant to protect it, what it is. And look, I told y'all, the people out here be talking about, no, we never asked for this. No. A lot of us did. And we perfected how to celebrate this in Texas. It's been a state holiday since 1980, y'all. Just ask some of us from Texas if you're confused as to how to celebrate Juneteenth.
Storm is rising against the privileged minority of the earth.
This is why I say it's liberty or it's death. It's freedom for everybody or freedom for nobody.
This is an NBC News Hotline special report.
We're at a turning point in the history of this nation. We need to stand for freedom. There's an escalating authoritarianism and even a creeping fascism. Freedom is precious. If we don't fight for it, you lose it.
This much is clear.
We must rebel.
This is our country. We have always lived in it. We were happy. Then you came. We have to protect ourselves. We have to save our country. We have to fight for what is ours.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your brother, Vimeer Dees Ogaya. And welcome to this Class War Battle for Podcast episode. In celebration of Juneteenth, I'm producing this episode. It's going to actually be released a little bit late because, so I've been recording episodes according to, or connected to various topics that have unfolded mostly in the month of June. My intent was to publish some of them at the beginning of June and then publish some towards the end. What I've just settled on doing was releasing them all around the same time. So just in one long episode with multiple parts. Juneteenth is among that group. So, this is a Juneteenth episode that's going to piss off some people, and I'm very okay with that, because the people it's going to piss off, they're going to be pissed off about just about anything I say anyway. But this is going to be an episode on race, to an extent. So I want to start off by saying, I personally started celebrating Juneteenth only a few years ago. I was familiar with it for most of my adult life, but I started celebrating it myself in 2016. I actually took off of work. I did that in 2016, 2017, wasn't able to in 2018, or 2019, or 2020. I was going through that prolonged illness that I've talked about on here a few times. And so I had missed significant portions of days, and so I said, I don't have the extra time, so boom. Voila. Can't really take Juneteenth off like I'd like to. When Juneteenth was made into a, quote, national holiday, I was kind of ticked off about that. Because, for me, black folks are, as many, I think, black radicals and black revolutionaries would suggest, are a nation within a nation. And our culture is not respected by the nation which we dwell among. Let's be very clear about that. The vision most white people have of black culture is not respectable, nor is it inaccurate in many instances, an accurate vision of black culture. The type of culture that they envision is an extension of the roles, R-O-L-E-S, they intend for black folks, for Africans stolen from Africa, brought here to work on the land to teach them what they knew, because these were skilled people, and to perpetuate this myth of white superiority by giving them all of the wisdom that they needed to make their systems seem viable. But in order to push along this myth of white supremacy, they had to minimize what non-white people gave to them. And so they designed, and I don't even know if it was intentional. And in fact, I know it was culturally intentional. But rather it was deliberate. At some time, I think there is an argument that could be made to say, no, it's not deliberate. But having looked at this arrangement within this nation for the last few years, it is deliberate now. The roles that they have us in as black folks, it is deliberate. So the culture that they envision black people within fits into these roles that they want us to play. And that's even to this very day. A great example of how well established these roles are is something that I heard so often, and I've talked about this before, but I'm mentioning it here because it really does speak to how white people view black folks. When I was a young, when I was not only just a kid, a child, a teenager, but well into my 20s, when I was in college in my mid-20s, I had people telling me, and by the way, my mid-20s wasn't 50 years ago. My mid-20s was 2007, 2008, 2009. Seems like a while ago, though, but it wasn't. I had people telling me, boy, you do not act black. Now, when I was a kid, I would say, well, I understand what you're saying, even though I didn't really understand what they were saying, but I thought I understood. But when I got older, I would say, well, what do you mean? Especially as I started getting close to Dr. King. Well, what do you mean? Well, you know, you don't sag your pants and you don't yo-yo-yo homie low. And okay, well, that's one part of black culture. But I mean, there's been millions of other black people who didn't talk like that. But even if I did, if I'm going to college and I talk like that, who cares? The role of the black person in that instance, and I just recognized this recently. When they said I didn't act black, they were describing for me the role of black people to white folks. Because this was always white people or white folks who or non-white people who wanted to be white. One of the most interesting things that I was ever told by a non-white person about me as a black person was this. I was, during college, we used to go to this Chinese restaurant. And we would eat there. And at one point, the owner, I got to know the owner really well, and he wanted me to meet his daughter, who was also in college. And he goes, you like Asian? And I said, oh, she's pretty. And she was, and she's very cute. And I go, but, you know, I figured you'd want somebody, you know, from your country to marry your daughter. And he goes, oh, absolutely, absolutely. But you, I tell him, you like black guys who work hard. And I go, huh? And he goes, how I say it? You, black guy, work hard. And I go, oh, yeah, always, man. My dad put that in me. And he goes, yeah, I see how you study, you read. And I know many black men, no study. But many I know, oh, they study hard. I was like, oh, wow, okay, oh. And to see an Asian person, I believe it was Chinese, explain that when he saw black folks, particularly black men, studying, they studied hard, blew my mind. Because for white people, when I was studying, when I was reading, when I was interpreting, when I was contemplating, I was not acting black. But for him, oh, you do your race well. Your people good. Oh, well, thank you. I appreciate it. But I'm not really looking for a girlfriend. So, you know, that was that. But, you know, him and I went, had a couple more conversations like that. And he asked me, he goes, I went, why not more like you? And I said, well, we are a people who have suffered greatly. Yeah, we all suffer greatly. But why not more like you? And I go, no, I don't believe you know how much we have suffered over here. And the pain and the scars. And him and I had those kind of conversations. Those are some great conversations. So let me turn off from that because I will stay there for a minute. Anyway, so these roles, which he didn't buy, These roles were meant to, especially how white people envision them, you know, they, as I was talking about before I went down that little rabbit hole there, when white folks would say, you don't act black because you study, they were equating whiteness with a studious work ethic, with intellectual vigor. They were equating blackness with intellectual uncuriosity, with intellectual devoidism, with a disdain for intellectualism. Another great example of this. I was working in an office full of women after college, worked there for a year under the AmeriCorps program, and I was doing human resource work. They didn't give me much to do, and I noted that. They were on top of giving a friend of mine who was also working there, a white girl who I had met while I was working there, they gave her a lot more responsibility than they wanted to give me. And it took me a while to figure out why. Because, you know, as nice as those folks were, they expected less from me, and so they gave me less to do. And finally, towards the end of my tenure there, I was there for about a year, a woman who had been there for decades, who had worked with black folks doing amazing things in the community on street level, she asked me, you know, if I knew what I wanted to do, and I said, I'm not really 100% sure, but I definitely kind of want to keep going down this pathway. And she said, well, have you ever thought about joining our weatherization team? And I was like, oh, yeah, in what capacity? Oh, going out, fitting houses, things like that. And I thought to myself, I'm like, wait a minute. I've been working with you for a year. You've seen my mind. You've seen my work ethic. You've seen my intellectual possibilities. And still, the only thing you can envision me as is a person going out and weatherizing houses. Now, there is nothing wrong with that. But the thing that keeps most black folks, especially those who start out in poverty, from reaching their fullest potential is white people never wanting to give them the opportunity to shine beyond those helper type of roles. And that is because deeply ingrained in white folks is this idea that if we as black folks are given too much of an opportunity to rise to our potential, that will reflect negatively on white people. Because that'll mean white people aren't better than us. That'll mean white people aren't better than us. This revelation hit me like a ton of bricks a couple of weeks ago. I had noted subconsciously and consciously that in the last few years, black people were in more places that I, or excuse me, more places I traveled in my region, in the area that I live in now. I was seeing more black folks working in places that I went to. And I was conscious of the fact that when I first moved over to this area back in 2013, black people were basically nowhere. And I knew this area had a double digit, not a high double digit, but still a double digit percentage of black folks. So my question was, where are all these black people working? Okay, went to the hospital. I seen a few people there. Went to Walmart. Okay, there's a couple people there. Not many, a couple. I went to a couple of other stores. Okay, one or two maybe. But there's hundreds of black folks here, and I'm not seeing them very few places except for McDonald's and the fast food joints. However, since George Floyd, I've seen more and more and more of them, culminating in an interaction with a brother who was working for Amazon. I saw him. He was came to drop off some packages at my apartment as I was getting home. And I was, you know, said to him, hey, brother, how's it going, man? And just smiled at him. He's like, oh, you know, it's good, brother. It's good. You know, hope you have a good day. And I go, man, you don't know how good it is for me to see you. And he's like, really? And I go, yeah. Yes. Yes. He's like, you know, living, though. Living. That's what we got to do. I'm like, yeah, but, dude, man, seeing you, seeing all of us. Because it's been a long time. I never thought I'd see as many of us. And he goes, yeah, man, we everywhere. I'm like, yeah, but just think, a short time ago, we weren't. I go, yeah, you're right. We did our little thing and went our separate ways. But that really brought it home to me. I'm like, wait a minute. 10 years ago, when I moved over here, black people were not that many places. But now, we're everywhere. And in thinking about why that was, I realized something. When white people talked about black people being lazy, and from my experiences with working in this town particularly, when white folks talked about black people being lazy, this was not based on the character of black folks. This was based on a projection. Now, obviously, clearly, this was something that I was familiar with from slavery times, from Jim Crow times, but seeing it in the workplace took some adjustments to my eyes. When white people said black folks were lazy, this was a projection of what they wanted black people to be. But what they saw compared to what they wanted was very different. What they saw was black people engaging at a high level of possible success. That angered many of them who saw potential for this black person, man or woman, to excel past them. And they said, we can't have that. We must stop them from rising. So how do we do it? We sabotage them. We get them angry. We talk down to them. We talk at them. We call them names that we believe they don't like. And we get them the hell out of here. And then we spread the rumors amongst ourselves to make our minds feel better about the injustice that we just executed together as a clan dedicated to racism and the myth of white supremacy. We tell ourselves, well, this person was a bad person. They were ungrateful. They were lazy. They didn't know. They were unintelligent. They were stupid. They couldn't follow simple directions. Even though we knew in our heart of hearts, none of that was true. We gave them contradictory instructions. We showed them the wrong way to do things. We talked down to them, at them, and we made them feel uncomfortable. We made them feel disjointed. And then we fired them for doing all the things we told them to do. That's what we did. But we're not going to acknowledge that. My experiences here, y'all, have led me to see, finally, because black folks been trying to explain some of this to me for years, but I was always on the side of, well, maybe you did something, and you know, we just got to give white people enough time. Yeah, you've had enough time. You've had 400 years. Your time is up. It's up. No more. What they've done, what they did before, is now crystal clear to me. It's now crystal clear to me. So why now are we starting to see a lot of black people, especially in the area that I'm living? Why do I think we're starting to see a lot of black people in this getting these jobs? Well, it's not because of George Floyd. And it's not because of Donald Trump. It's not because of Joe Biden. It's because COVID-19. See, since the 70s, there has been more employees than there has been jobs. And since the 70s, black people have faced higher unemployment because the last ones hired were the first ones fired. Black folks of a certain age know this saying. Throughout the 80s, the 90s, the 2000s, and the 2010s, most of the 2010s, black folks were at a disadvantage when it came to the labor force. Because, again, more employees or more people than there were jobs offered. But in the latter part of the 2010s, the baby boomer generation started to enter retirement in increasing numbers. This opened up a lot of slots for black folks to go into various businesses that needed help but didn't have the capacity or maybe even the labor force available to them to hire non-black people. More, and I must acknowledge this, Barack Obama did have a positive impact on how white people saw black potential. Many folks were like, well, if black people were just like Obama, or I'm sorry, not Obama, but if black people were just acting more like this, 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 and this, then we'd be able to, you know, work with them. Well, what Obama pretty much did was reinforce the idea that black excellence is only achieved through tapping black potential. And that means being patient as black folks develop, because you don't expect a white person to develop immediately upon entering adulthood and be 100% perfect. Why do you expect that from black folks? So that did have a positive impact. And you saw that. At the end of the Obama administration, black unemployment was plummeting. Donald Trump likes to take credit for that. That wasn't Donald Trump. Now, at the end of the 2010s, by the end of the 2010s, the baby boomer generation was retiring in increasing numbers. This had been predicted. But as I've talked about before, the impact on the labor market wasn't due to become significant until the mid to late 2020s. Then COVID, let me back up and explain quickly. The reason the labor impact wasn't due to become more critical until the mid-2020s to late 2020s was because the number of baby boomers entering retirement wasn't going to increase to the point of not being replenished by the number of people graduating or, quote, entering the labor market until the mid to late 2020s. Well, then that thing called COVID-19 hit. And a lot of elderly people died. A lot of non-elderly people died. People in their 50s and 60s, their 40s, their 30s, their 20s. But specifically, the majority of the people who died from COVID-19 in the United States were in their 50s, their 60s, their 70s, and above, if I remember the numbers correctly. Moreover, because of Donald Trump and the xenophobia and open white supremacist and open racism that he sparked, many non-white people who had come to the United States on visas and what have you to work, they went back home and never came back to the United States. Saw a story actually on that a few years ago. There was a suggestion in that story that the United States could be short several million jobs yearly because of what Donald Trump had sparked. That had basically scared off what would have been an influx of millions of people on visas from non-white countries who were producing a vast number of professionals, which the United States had been taking advantage of for much of the past 30 years. Because despite what, you know, Republican voters want to think, when you deprive your children of a sound education, when you are constantly cutting your educational budgets, when you are constantly cutting into the curriculum that these children need to know, and you've been doing it since the 70s, you are not going to build generations that are able to compete with other societies that are dumping massive amounts of money into their educational systems. And not only are they dumping massive amounts of money into their educational systems, they are putting a value on that culturally. I've mentioned it before and I'll mention it again. The Dollop, D-O-L-L-O-P. Check out the episode on the West Virginia textbook wars. You want to kind of get a view of where we're at? The West Virginia textbook wars happened back in the 1970s. So these things came together. And especially, I got to emphasize the COVID-19 part, because with those people dying, those people in their 50s and 60s and 70s and above, with those people dying, that scared baby boomers into retiring early. And so the labor shortage that was going to be appearing in the mid to late 2020s started appearing in the early 2020s. And then that was made worse by the millions of legal immigrants that were not flooding to the United States to stay in the United States to fill some of these professional roles because they didn't want to have to deal with the racists and the white supremacist myth holders. This then opened up the door for more blacks in the country who traditionally had been skipped over for jobs to enter the labor market and actually become part of that labor market. Now, obviously, there's folks who will say, well, wait a minute. Black people not getting jobs is not white people's fault. Black people just didn't do X, Y, and Z. No, what I'm seeing is there is a trend. And it is white people's fault. One to two black people, sometimes three black folks, was fine. But once when some of these companies started amassing too many black folks, people at that company got uncomfortable and started ratting folks in, started trying to destroy black folks from getting in and rising through the ranks or even just getting into work. So, you know, this black people being kept out of the labor market wasn't their fault. It was a white cultural unity project, basically, where keeping them out was almost seen as the duty of the community to keep their spaces without blemish, without black people mucking it up. And having gone from being a almost trustee with white people to being a person who white folks think I tell the truth too much, because when I talk about race, I'm not willing to allow white people to escape into their safe corners anymore. I can tell you from experience that white people play on, a lot of white folks play on the capacity of black people to be very forgiving. Not only very forgiving, but our desire to see the humane in every person we come across. They play on that. They also play on the fact that black people tend to go off of personal experiences rather than group experiences. So a lot of black folks will say, well, this white person ain't never did me wrong, so it must be something that you've done. Well, that is a blinding type of stance that eliminates the possibility that this person could be two-faced, which is something that all black people believe in. But as long as you get treated well, and I've been in this position where I've said to other black folks, well, they ain't never did that to me. Yeah, well, what I'm seeing is just because they ain't never did it to me didn't mean that they didn't do it. And a lot of white people expect the benefit of the doubt and abuse the benefit of the doubt, especially if they believe they can utilize your goodwill and your reputation around the community. What does this all have to do with Juneteenth? The desire to incorporate Juneteenth into the white nation calendar, to me, signals a society, or I'm sorry, signals that this society is trying to escape a judgment which they are justly due. I want you to think about a concept with me, because many of you have watched various movies where, like, aliens come to Earth. Many of you have watched movies where superheroes are on the planet and doing amazing things. What if, let's say, at the conclusion of World War II, 1946 sometime, there was these tablets that were discovered. They were unusual. And they were discovered, let's say, in the caves or in a cave system in the Grand Canyon, and another set along the Tigris River, and another set in some caves uncovered among the or along the Yangtze, and another set in Zimbabwe. But they were all just partial sets, and I should add the Andes too, because, you know, the Andes would definitely be in there. But they were all partial sets. When you brought them together, though, they told a story. And it was a unique story. It talked about the history of the world that could have been, but the history of the world that was, and why the history turned out the way that it was. And towards the end of these tablets when put together, and was a warning that on a certain date in the future, judgment would begin for those who had created the world in the fashion that it was in. And it accurately talked about who had done it and why. The only problem was with the tablets. Everything else was readable. Everything else by Europeans, because that would probably be who mostly found these and tried to read them. I'm not saying that other indigenous people wouldn't have, but let's say that they were meant to get into the hands of white people. The only problem was there was one part that was not translatable. That was the date. That was the event surrounding the date. Now, to save face, the European didn't publish any of that. They skipped over it. And it was not a short section. But it explained the events surrounding the judgment, when it would start, how it would start, who would be afflicted, why, when, how, all of it. But they didn't publish it because they couldn't translate it. Then in 2012, a group of elders from various tribes on Turtle Island, from North to South America, came forward and said to the United Nations that somebody had these texts, and that this group of elders, along with a number of elders from Australia, Africa, China, India, and maybe even the Pacific Ocean, they could translate those missing sections. Obviously, the first thing that would happen would be, oh, well, we deny that there's any. And the elders, okay, we believe you. You deny it. The elders then go into meditation. 40 days, maybe 50 days, come back and present to these people a verbatim print of two of the pages that they had been hiding away. And they say to him, we need to translate this. And if you don't allow us to translate it, the earth is going to shake. They deny it. They still won't let him have it. And the earth shakes. There's a huge storm that hits the east coast of the United States late 2012. Let's jump forward and say finally in 2014, 2015, after some wrangling and still being denied access to these plates, the elders translate a page, but only a little bit of the page. And they say, these things are going to happen in the next 7 years. Once when they do, you need to let us translate these things. And they send it to the folks who they know have the plates. And all those things happen, including the start of the pandemic. Finally, they get somewhere. Okay, we'll let you translate the plates. Well, we're going to wait until a few years and then we'll do it. And they do, and they translate them. And they release the translation online before it could be hidden away. And in the translation, there's a talk of how in 2019, judgment is going to befall the center city of the white supremacist myth holders. And it goes through what the next 40, 50 years is going to be like for those who have created the world the way that it was. For those who have that seed within them to create destruction. And this translation, while on the internet, it seems to be somewhat suppressed because most people don't know about it. Amongst the elite, it's being transferred to everybody. Everybody knows about this translation. They call it the 160 pages that you must read. They want to know if it's true or not. So the elders say to them, we have one message from the universal God. And they write out the message. It's 20 pages. New material. Gives it to them. And they said that must be released within the next 6 months. If you do not do it, the earth shall shake. These people listen this time. They release it. But they read through it first. And it tells them what is expected of them in the next 10 years. If you do these things, much of what was in the original translation will be minimized, so it won't hurt as much. You still have to go through it, but it will be minimized because you owe it. I was reading a beautiful passage written by a king in Africa. Was also a spiritual leader. And he was explaining this idea of being washed free of your sins, and you never have to actually undergo the transformative work and pain connected to the things that you have done that have put you off balance. White people want an easy way out of this. These folks, these elders, told them, you got to go through it anyway, but you get to choose the pain. Let me ask you this, because this is why I wanted you to think through this with me. What do you think the response would be by these folks at the head of this white supremacist nationalist nation? What do you think the response would be to a group of elders that are not white giving them this information? Do you think they'd change their actions? Or do you think they would try to prepare to make sure that it doesn't hurt them as much while the rest of the world goes through the pain that their actions had caused? My might you also think that they would try to do some symbolic moves and gestures to show the heavens that, well, look, we're trying. We're not really trying, but we're trying. Thinking that God is a fool and that God couldn't see their hearts. This is what Juneteenth is. It's a symbolic gesture towards pretending that black folks matter in this country. When we don't. When we don't. Several years ago, when I think it was right after Crawford was killed back in 2014, I was listening to Christmas music. I'm a huge fan of Christmas music. Love Christmas music. But I was listening to Christmas music on one of the stations that's in the area. And I remember noting how odd it was, because I'd been listening to Christmas music on that station for literally a decade and a half, more actually. And the playlist of Christmas songs that they either had access to or that they promised to play was pretty standard. I could guess the music that they were going to play. They didn't play a ton of new stuff. They were starting to kind of sprinkle in some newer stuff as, you know, the 80s got further away. But among that new stuff, there was a couple of black artists that they would play. When it came to older music, it was a couple of black artists that they would play. But the majority of what they played was what was heavy-duty white Christmas stuff. And I wasn't against it. I liked a lot of the songs, so it was whatever. But I suddenly realized, listening, I'm like, okay, I've been listening for an hour, and I think this is the sixth or seventh, okay, well, maybe the sixth, maybe it was the fourth or fifth, black song that I'm hearing. The next year, I noted the same thing. The next year, again, the same thing. And that kicked me back to something that my father tried telling me about the importance of symbolism when it came to white folks. They will symbolically integrate you so that it catches you off guard when they disintegrate you. This is what is happening. Moreover, and this is the last thing I want to speak on here, a lot of white people are not happy about Juneteenth being at it. Now, yeah, sure, it gets to be another day, but or another day off for many of them, but the reason they're not happy about it is because they see it as imposing on July 4th, on the true Liberation Day for them. More as a white woman told me, and I will be talking in the future about why we need to really, especially as black folks, we need to not get involved with this patriarchy nonsense, because white women have been there for the whole ride, and for the few that are really for women's rights, and it's a few, it's a minority, and I think it's a significant minority, they understood that most white women were not about anything but white supremacy. But as this white woman told me, when the company that I was working for decided to switch out Easter for Martin Luther King Day. Now, this woman was not a Catholic. She was demonic, so maybe she needed to be a Catholic so they can exorcise that demon in her. But, and I say that a little tongue-in-cheek, but it's kind of real. I mean, there are certain people you can look at and say, oh, shoot, that's an evil presence. She's one of them. Anyway, every year she made it a point. I don't know why we have to have Martin Luther King Day off when Easter is a real holiday. Martin Luther King Day is not a real holiday. Well, Easter isn't a real holiday either. And considering that she was into Wiccanism, and she was into all kinds of, quote, naturally aligned holiday celebrations and festivals, she probably should have known that, and she didn't. The point of that story is to help you see. A lot of these white folks, they don't want to integrate black holidays into their calendar. And as black folks, I think we really need to just say, okay, cool, we'll hold our own calendar. We'll hold our own calendar. That's it. Questions, comments, concerns, you can always reach out to me. This one's a little bit of a rough one for those who aren't used to actually having real conversations about race. But again, if you want to contact me about this and tell me I'm wrong or tell me I'm right, radio, the number 4, ALL.net, radio, the number 4, ALL.net, type in Class War Battlefield Podcast, Class War Battlefield Podcast, and just click on any of the shows and you can contact me right through there. You can also hit me up on Twitter, where my handle is Vimera Diesel Gaia. You can hit me up on Class War Battlefield Podcast on Facebook. I've had that for a minute. Class War Battlefield Podcast on Facebook. You know, reach out there if you want. Follow me there. And if you'd like to support the work that I'm doing, CWB Podcast. CWB Podcast. CWB Podcast. Cash App. And PayPal. Big up to Dr. Obatashaka, Remix Morning Show, Professional Left Podcast, The Dollop. I've been waiting for something to happen. Best of the Left. All my peoples, y'all keep putting out that great content. Countdown with Keith Olbermann. Man, there's a bunch of them, man. I should just start a list, right? And just see if I can beg them out, like, at the end of the shows. Anyway. Until the next one, family. I've been waiting for something to happen for a week or a month or a year. Peace. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who finally can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lives in the balance.